On energy, I kept asking myself, well, what is it? They keep talking about this. They want a new energy pact. And I keep thinking, what more could they get than they got under NAFTA, which contained a proportional sharing agreement? We are now sending almost 70% of our oil production to the United States, and we have to keep doing that. So now, in order to supply ourselves, do you know that we're importing almost half of our oil needs in Canada? No wonder the bills are so high, because we can't cut back. And, of course, now we're going into the Athabasca tar sands, and now, of course, big American companies are coming in wanting to cement those tar sands. So I racked my brains and read and read and read, and one day when I was out jogging, it popped into my head. Of course I know what they want. They want deregulation of our environmental rules around searching for new energy supplies and around the Mackenzie Valley pipeline. Like, it just seemed to me so clear that what they want, and not to forget that the United States did not sign Kyoto and Canada did, and they don't want to be bound by Kyoto rules when they take over the tar sands. On water, nobody will say publicly that they're talking about water, but we got a hold of the leaked minutes of one of the meetings of the task force on the future of North America. And they said that all three countries agree that water will be on the table one day, sooner than later, but that it's too politically iffy right now to put water out there. And I tell you, I travel a lot in the United States. I've been recently in Lubbock, Texas, and Kentucky, and I've been in Idaho, and I can tell you it's not a drought they're having, okay? This is not a drought. The U.S. Midwest has got the least amount of water that it's had in 500 years. There's a crisis coming, and they are going to be looking sooner than later north for our water. Healthcare, I don't have to tell the people in this room about the urgency of this post the Supreme Court decision. Dr. Chowley, the doctor who led the fight to the Supreme Court, is going all over the United States telling American for-profit hospital corporations to come on up to Canada because NAFTA's been broken and you can come here and make money. He's the darling of the Enterprise Institute and all of these right-wing foundations. We're going to have to fight very hard if we're going to stop the further erosion and privatization of health care. And finally, the last concern I want to throw out to you, and this chapter kind of blew me away, because one of these things, you got an idea of it, but when you start to really research, you realize the depth of it, and that is the effect on our environment and health and safety regulations of this move now to merge the regulatory regimes with the United States. They brought in this smart regulation, which is just a fancy word for deregulation, and every department in the federal government has been told to bring in a plan, and that plan is then to be merged, and there are dozens of cross-border committees working now to merge every aspect of seeds, food, the Food and Drug Act, which we are about to allow to change from having a being based on the precautionary principle to being based on risk assessment, which is essentially where you say, how many people can we allow to get sick or die and still keep this product on the market? Literally, there's a whole science around it. And the guy who designed the science and set it up, the department at Harvard University that got funded by the big business community in the United States, is now running the regulatory regime in the White House. And he's the guy who designed the whole concept of risk assessment, and we are adopting it wholesale. And I have to tell you that I came upon this thing, and I'm going to tell you in a second, by accident. But did you know that Environment Canada has opened up under its smart regulation regime the same kind of discussions with big business to set up a voluntary code? They're called sectoral table negotiations, and Industry Canada, Environment Canada, and they're starting with chemicals, energy, automobiles, mining, and forestry, those five sectors. And they're actually sitting down negotiating so that these sectors can be removed from current legislation and current regulations and negotiate one-on-one a new set of agreements around so that Canada can be competitive. And Environment Canada is supposed to both look after the environment and help Canadian industry become competitive at the same time. So I think we have a problem, as you can see. Deep integration of our continent is happening steadily, comprehensively, and below the radar screen. And it is being driven almost exclusively by the needs and interests of the big business community and the voices of those concerned with healthcare, education, human rights, social justice, the environment, international development, cultural diversity, and workers' rights have been totally and completely sidelined. And I say it's time for this to change. The Council has launched a campaign to halt and reverse this process. We believe that joining the Bush Revolution would be the worst possible thing for Canada and the world. And make no mistake, by having signed this partnership agreement in Waco this past March, Canada is really becoming an enabler, allowing the Bush team to stay its destructive global course. A better course would be seeking out the many millions of Americans who distrust and dislike what's happening to their country under this administration as well, and working with them and Mexicans and others from the hemisphere to build a very different kind of future for this continent and for the hemisphere. So we are calling for a full moratorium on this process. Stop now. They're supposed to meet every year. The agreement is each March they will meet and they will report to each other on the progress deepen this partnership and this agreement. It's not to go to Parliament. We have no ability to vote on this thing. Let me tell you, when you read and understand the depth of it, this is, in my opinion, it's more serious than NAFTA. Okay, and yet there's no public debate on this. We're calling for a Royal Commission on Canada-U.S. relations, which would open this whole process up to public debate. We want a Made in Canada energy strategy, a national water policy. We want to stop the privatization of healthcare. We want to reverse this dreadful smart regulation, deregulation process. And we believe that we need to recognize the fact that the U.S. has broken NAFTA by what it's done, disobeying the tribunals on softwood lumber, and therefore Canada is no longer obligated to abide by the terms and conditions of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Yes. To end the formal part of all of this with some, just what I ended, how I ended the book, and then just want to talk with you rather than at you. I wanted to, you know, when you write a book like this, and Murray will, I bet my bottom dollar, agree with me, you come to the end and you start to make a list of what should be, and it gets so bloody boring. And again, jogging one day, out popped a different way of looking at it. And so what I asked then what I consider to be the four great questions of our time, because I think there are these very powerful, pressing questions. And to ask the question, what is Canada prepared to do on them? And by taking this next step of deep integration with the Bush administration, how are we not making a backdoor decision on these great issues? And so I'll just end with these four, what I think are the four great questions of our time. The first is how to deal with the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, especially the weaponization of space. This is just, The China and Russia have made a detente. They've said, we can't allow the United States to go into space. We can't allow them to nuclearize, put nuclear weapons in space, and stay here and not do it. We are on the verge of a brand new level of a brand new world Cold War. And we know what the American response is. They've been made it very, very clear. They've got space superiority. They intend to keep it. It doesn't matter how much it costs. And that $1 trillion I talked about does not include what they call the black budget, which is the budget for space war. What will Canada's position be on this? So far, it looks as if we're going to be an enabler by bringing this interoperability process to North American defense. The second great question is how to deal with the deepening poverty and injustice within countries and between countries, particularly between the global north and the global south. And there are some very powerful recent books and studies that say, in fact, don't listen to the World Bank when they say things are getting better. Things are getting profoundly worse, with a super rich class being created in every country in the world, including China and India, and life becoming deadeningly worse for the majority. Again, we know what the U.S. response is: more economic globalization, more unregulated markets, more privatization. They forced the developing world to privatize healthcare and education. Now they're saying, and water's next. And so we're in this big fight to stop the theft of the world's water. What will Canada's response be on this? The third great question of our time is how to end, in my opinion, is how to end fundamentalism, extremism, violence, and terrorism. Now, we know what the answer from the Bush administration is. It's more bombs, borders, and Bibles. And the question for Canada will be, can we conceive of another way of coming at the whole question of security from a position of the question of human security in a much fuller definition? And the last of the great questions, I think, for us to start to deal with, and of course so many people are trying to sound this alarm, and that is to acknowledge and deal with the ecological limits of the Earth, particularly climate change and the growing crisis of the energy and water shortages in our world. And again, we know that the United States refuses to sign the Kyoto Protocol, is continuing to lead the world in energy consumption, and now is heading to produce the worst greenhouse gases in the world with the production of more mining in the Athabasca tar sands. Where will Canada stand on this? And by signing this agreement, in effect, we've already said we side here. No matter what Paul Martin says around, we're going to stand up to George Bush on softwood lumber, what's really happening is something else. Mm-hmm. So there is no more important question in my mind than to answer, or more important task for us than to answer these questions and to try to position Canada in a very different place. The world is in desperate need for counterweights to the Bush administration, and Murray mentioned some of them. I would add that we've had the wonderful example of France and the Netherlands saying no to the one big market model of the European Union, which has killed that model. Now they're going back to looking at Europe as more of a political and social model. Or with the magic that's happening in Latin America and the fact that the leaders came back from that meeting empty-handed and do not have a free trade area of the Americas, and we're not going to get it. And when Martin and Bush say, well, we'll do it without Brazil, I say, get a map, go back to grade 8, get your old grade 8 atlas out and look at Latin America, look at South America and try to do that without Brazil and Venezuela and Uruguay. And I mean, are you insane? Of course you needed your deal with the few little small little countries in Central America, which Bush just about had to beat the whole world up to get past. You're not going to get that because the world's saying no. And I'm off in December to Hong Kong for the WTO ministerial, where I am priming myself to be there for the third failure of that dreadful institution. And I tell you, it's going to happen. Canada's narrative, and we've done many things wrong, but we've done some things very right. And we did the one thing I want to say that we did right was that we built these ribbons of interdependence because we knew if we didn't share, we wouldn't survive. So few of us living in this great big harsh, cold environment, we knew that if we didn't share with each other and bring a public face together with private enterprise, we wouldn't survive. And we built a very important mixed economy so that the public sector did things that the private sector could not. Looking after people in remote areas, delivering the mail to places that it wasn't economically feasible to do, bringing trains, bringing health care to people. We had to turn to each other for survival. The American narrative has been survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I feel when you look at the four great questions of our time, the answer to those four great questions is sharing for survival, not survival of the fittest. Survival of the fittest is that notion has the same DNA as a cancer cell. It's going to have to turn on its host in order to survive. The world cannot sustain what we're doing to it. And I want our country and the people in our country, the Canadians here, who come from all over the world, who've chosen this place to stand up and say no to this agenda and to be part of a different vision for this continent, for the hemisphere, and for the world. And that is a mighty challenge, which I know we're going to take up. And I thank you.